Like, okay, well, let's see how you do with this team. Let's see, can you hold this team up? And sure, the expectations are different, but I think so far, you look at, again, the four games that I mentioned, Charlotte and Portland at home, at Houston, at Minnesota, really 3.5 of that four games, the Warriors have been competitive and looked like a team that's had a clue as to what they're doing, which is a credit to Steve Kerr and those that say, okay, what have you really got in the tank as a head coach?
Exactly. This is a season where a lot of people said, all right, Mr. Answer Man, because he's got the answers for everything, not only in basketball, but on the planet. Let's see how it works now. Let's see how hard you're able to get this thing moving in your direction. Let's see how smart you are now, Mr. Big. You know what? Early in the season, they got pushed around. They got kicked around. There's still going to be teams that are liking kicking those guys while they're down. They're sick and tired of the shimmy. They're sick and tired of the Draymonds. They're sick and tired of Clay just firing jumper after jumper after jumper. Now they are going to get their comeuppance. It's not going to last all, you know, for 5-year strand. But right now, teams are going to get used. They're going to get fat off the Golden State Warriors. I give the Warriors credit. They've been playing hard, and that's all you can ask them to do.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Warriors this week, John Dickinson and Jim Cosimore here on 95.7 The Game. Warriors coming into play tonight in Oklahoma City at 2-7. Warriors finding wins hard to come by. Real opportunity to win last night in Minnesota, but they bungled the game, really, in the final minute. And that's what, you know, teams that have players that aren't used to winning, it can get that way down the stretch, even against another team that may or may not be a playoff team in the Western Conference.
Listen, that is a difficult thing to learn how to do in the NBA. And for those of you who are longer-time Warrior fans, you remember when they had the hiccups. Remember, they had the 23-win season, they kept their pick at number 7, they got Harrison Barnes. Well, the next year they didn't win a title, but they were learning to win. They were learning to get better. They were learning how to finish games out, not stub your own toe, not get in your own way. That's part of it. We just remember how when they did figure out, man, they were really good at closing games. So remember, there was a time where they had to learn that. There's that old adage in the NBA, you don't go from a ne'er-do-well to an NBA champion. You got to take the steps along the way. But I think the loss, the stub of the toe last night where they seemingly had a win and turned it into a loss or turned it into an overtime and then turned it into a loss, that's part of growing pains. These guys haven't done it at this level.
Gary St. Jean's going to join us coming up at 10:30. Mark Medina at 11:30 as we get into the discussion about load management. Do you think the Warriors might find themselves in a position where they're going to, not load management, but really have to monitor, you know, how they prepare players to return? Because, you know, you had the report from Rick Bucher that he walked back a little bit, but the original report, Coase, was that the hand injury for Curry was worse than originally thought, and that it's unlikely he plays this season. Then he walked that back a little bit to more of, well, why would he play? Because the Warriors are going to be out of the playoff race by February. I think Stephen Curry is going to want to play. We can also hear from Steve Kerr about that coming up. He spoke to that before the game in Minnesota yesterday, his take on that report. But, I mean, as you view it, do you think we see Stephen Curry again this year? I think we do.
I do. I think you see Steph Curry. I'm not sure about Klay Thompson because I want to see Klay Thompson back, but not for the reason I think a lot of Warrior fans want him back. I want him to come back to get over the mental rust of injuring your knee. I want him to get, if it's 10 games, and again, this is my belief on load management. If you are coming back from an actual injury, and all three of those guys have actual injuries, Draymond's injury isn't just I bent my finger back the wrong way. He's got an injury. I think those guys who come back, there is no question load management is in play. Back-to-back games, no need to do it. Selective play because it's an injury. But then there is a time when you have to feel they are back from whatever that particular injury is. But I certainly would like to see Klay come back. I do think we'll see Steph come back. You want to know why? Because I don't think Steph Curry's the kind of guy who says, I need to sit the whole season out.
And again, it's a hand injury, so you make sure it's healed. Yeah. And look, if it is more significant than originally thought, then you just take a little extra time to have it heal. But I think the Warriors are in a spot where if February is the original timeline, not for a return, but for a reevaluation, you could even give them another month to 6 weeks beyond that point in time, and you still got a month to go in the season. 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. It's JD and Co's Warriors this week on 95.7 The Game.
Warriors This Week continues on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Jim Cosmore, and you at 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. It's Warriors This Week. Gary St. Jean joins us coming up in about 10 minutes. And so we'll get Saints takeaways from the 52-point night, a career night for D'Angelo Russell in the Warriors' overtime loss to the Timberwolves. The Warriors back at it tonight in Oklahoma City as the games continue to come fast and furious. The Warriors playing in Oklahoma City for the second time in 14 days, because that makes sense. What makes less sense, Coz? The Warriors playing in Oklahoma City for the second time in 14 days, or the Warriors traveling from Minnesota to Oklahoma City on the second night of a back-to-back?
Yeah. There are some weird schedule maneuvers. I know Sacramento has the same thing, with Portland coming to Sacramento two times in the same span, less than 2 weeks. And then you're done with them. You won't see them again in your building the rest of the way. You might see them later on in the year in their building one or two times, depending on how the schedule weighs out that particular season. It is a weird one. I don't understand why they do that, but I don't understand how difficult scheduling is. I got to be honest. Trying to fit 30 teams into 82 games and somehow make it work.
Let me tell you something.
That's not easy.
It's not as hard as they make it.
Really?
It's not as hard as they make it.
See, well, you're smarter than I am. You're a guy who would take the Mensa test, and you'd be over, you know, you'd get a high score.
I've told Matt Steinmetz on this show before, I've said I could do the NBA schedule. Like, I could
Seriously?
Do it. Could be me in an XL, and I could do the whole schedule.
Seriously?
Yes.
Come on. No, wait a minute.
Yes.
And
do a better job.
Reasonable.
And do a better job than they do. Yeah.
Seriously.
Make it reasonable.
Now, would you also take into effect the network games?
Sure.
Because there are certain nights, like Thursday night TNT
sure.
is going to want
yeah,
specific
you
matchups.
You know what? That's fine. You can have the matchups, but the one thing we're not going to do is we're not going to make them where those are two-game nights. We're not going to make it where there's two games that night, and those are the two games you get. We're gonna up that a little bit.
Well, they have to, though. I mean, now there are more than two games.
But we're doing away with that in my world.
Well, you can't. That's not how you make
money. We're doing away with that.
But
we're doing away with ESPN having the last game of the night every night that they have a game, to where even if you're watching other games on League Pass, the last game of the night for a half is ESPN, so you have to turn to watch that game if you want your NBA fix, even if you're paying for NBA League Pass. We're doing away with that too in my world.
Wow, so you want to be commissioner. You don't want to be the schedule maker. You want to be commissioner?
Well, I'm
going to
be the schedule maker, but I'm going to say let's make it really fair, because I think it's actually a little bit fraudulent the way the NBA does the schedule.
Really?
Yeah, I think they've come out and they've said, oh, we've done all these things, eliminate back to back. But all they do is they push the problems. Look at how many freaking games the Warriors are playing. They played one game in what, the first 5 or 6 days of the season, and then it's every other day, back-to-back, every other day, back-to-back. I mean, all the way till bleeping New Year's, for crying out loud. All the way till the last week of January. It's a joke the way they do it. The Warriors shouldn't be playing tonight in Oklahoma City. They should be playing tomorrow in Oklahoma City. They shouldn't be playing Monday at home. If anything, they should come back home, get a day, play Utah Tuesday night, and then go and have the back-to-back the back-to-back shouldn't have been Minnesota to Oklahoma City. The back-to-back should have been Tuesday night at home against Utah, and then you go to L.A. and you play L.A. on the second night of a back-to-back, and the travel is San Francisco to L.A., not Minnesota to Oklahoma City, for crying out loud. But no, you can't have a back-to-back in a national game because somebody might rest. Get out of here with that nonsense. You're going from San Francisco to L.A.
But I'm telling you, though, the way the schedule is laid out, if you're telling them they've got to go play Minnesota, Oklahoma City's not that big a deal. You go to Oklahoma City, you want them playing on Sunday, but then they're playing on Monday.
No, but you're not playing Monday. That's my point. You're not playing tonight. You're playing tomorrow. You're not playing Monday. You're playing Utah Tuesday, and you're playing the Lakers Wednesday.
By the way, here's
that's
how
the
lays
way it
out.
Should be.
Here's how it lays out, right? Here's how November lays out. They played the first, the second, off the third. Played the fourth, off the fifth. Played the sixth, off the seventh. Played the eighth and ninth, off the tenth. Play the 11th off the 12th.
13th, 15th, yep. 17th, 19th, 20th, 22nd, 24th.
Here's your break.
Or 25th.
Yeah, here's your break. The 22nd to the 25th is your break.
Yeah, and that's only one of two-day breaks between
the
second game of the season, and I think it's the weekend before Christmas is the next one.
There's December 6th and then December 9th. That's a 7th and 8th. You got that. You got those off. But other than that, it's almost an every day, December 15th through December 18th. You've got a couple of days off there.
I remember, I was in the league
when they're playing 4 and 5 nights.
Look, the load management thing is the NBA's fault.
I disagree.
The NBA's fault because they've falsely put it in people's minds that they've fixed the NBA schedule. And in reality, all they've done is they've changed the way they do the network games.
Well, here's my deal. The NBA has added weeks to the season, not added games to the season. So they have added time.
But they haven't used the time effectively. That's my
take. Maybe they're still trying to figure it out. This was my argument when they said we're going to add 2 weeks to the season so we don't have as many back-to-backs. You know what that means? You're going to have more days on the road. They're not giving you time off at home. That means when you travel, instead of playing 4 games in 5 nights and being back home, you're going to play 4 games in 7 nights. Now you're gone for the full week.
True.
And you're going to have more time off. Now, are those dead days on the road staying in a hotel better than playing 4 and 5 nights and coming back home? Now, they say rest is the best thing for anybody, but especially for athletes. Is being gone for a longer time, how does that affect the body? Did you ever see there's a woman who is a sleep doctor and tracks NBA games and gives NBA picks based on sleep nights? And she usually has a pretty good record. I got to see if I can find it. Maybe someone knows this on the Chilton Auto Body text line. There is a woman sleep doctor who follows the NBA and will tell you, based on sleep patterns and how guys are traveling and when they're playing, the likelihood of who will win a particular game.
Oh, yeah, I believe that.
She's like 19-3. She's got an incredible record. I got to see if I can find that.
I believe that. Maybe. But anyway, it gets into the whole conversation about load management. But because it all comes back. The load management thing always comes back to the schedule. And I just am of the belief that the NBA doesn't handle the schedule as well as they could. But they've done enough to cover their ass. They've done enough to cover their ass. And, all right, no more 4 and 5 nights. You know, but they've still, the primary thing is protecting the national games at the expense of other scenarios that put teams in a bad spot. And
listen,
one of those is the Warriors. The Warriors should not be playing last night and tonight.
Okay, that's fair. Okay. But when you say they protect the national game, did you see what ESPN's national game was yesterday? The Washington Wizards taking on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Not exactly an A-lister. All right? Two of the worst teams in the NBA going at it. And that was their national game. So they don't protect, they don't just protect all the national games. But I hear you. By the way, great question, 408. Does the WNBA have load management issues? I don't believe I hear about it in the W. They don't have, but they also don't
have. Well,
they have
players that are playing overseas.
They actually play year round.
Yeah.
The only one who did have load management took the year off, and that was Taurasi. She took a year off, I think, 1 year in the WNBA because she was making bank playing in Russia. Some oligarch was paying her $400 to play. She's like, man, I really make bank over there. So,
If you're going to pick one.
Yeah, if you're going to pick one.
You're going to play where they're paying you.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're going to take.
No one's arguing that point. I'll tell you that.
I mean, that's just smart.
I still think it's difficult to schedule. You think it's pretty good. Good one to hear, by the way, from the 408. If Dickinson can solve the scheduling issues in the NBA, he should work for PG&E. I agree with you. I was a sufferer 5 days and 4 nights without power. Thank you, PG&E.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Gary St. Jean coming up here in just about 2 or 3 minutes. We'll see what he made of D'Angelo Russell's 52-point performance last night in Minnesota, and just the fit between him and the other young Warriors players that are trying to develop. Because I think that was actually a positive takeaway from last night.
Yeah.
It looked like it fit when it looked like it fit better with D'Angelo and that group than it did with D'Angelo and Steph and Draymond. Because he hadn't really played with this group. other than the one San Antonio game.
Well, let me ask you something. When you score 52, how much are you playing with the other four guys on the floor? And how much are you kind of doing what you do? And I don't mean that, and that's not a rip. That's not a rip.
But
that's
he was able to do what he does, and the other players on the floor were able to still be effective. I mean, you had an 8-point lead with him going off.
That's true. You know, I mean, you look at some big night, big scoring nights, and usually it's a guy carrying his team to a loss. But he had his team, and it was a loss last night, but he had his team in it for the entirety. And ahead, like JD pointed out, they grasped loss from the jaws of victory.
They bungled the game at the end of the game.
Sure.
But here's the thing. Under-talented teams do that. That's not coaching. Like, sometimes you're, coaching, you got to be. Although, I do think Steve Kerr could have called a timeout before the jump ball, before the play that led to the jump ball. They had two timeouts at that point. So, to me, when you're having a tough time getting the ball up the court, you immediately call timeout and you reset and you get the ball on your own end, and then you try and throw it in at that point, and then the Timberwolves have to foul you.
I get that. I agree. I love this point of when a coach should call timeout and when he shouldn't call timeout. You watch around the NBA. There was a game involving the Bulls, the Lakers. They were up on the Lakers big all game. Lakers in the midst of a 16-0 run. Jim Boylan, their head coach, does not call time. His argument is, guys have to figure it out for themselves. I can't do everything for them.
Well, but if you have two timeouts and 20 seconds left, you can call a timeout when you're ahead.
I know, and it's all coaches' perception of what they want their guys to learn. And there are a lot of coaches who will sit there, and they'll eat it for a little bit, knowing the guys have to figure it out for themselves. I don't know how true that is, but I've seen a lot of coaches do it that way.
Well, that's a convenient explanation.
Okay.
I mean, it is. And look, you know, Jim Boylan isn't going to be the head coach of the Bulls the next time the Bulls are good, so he can get away with that.
He just signed a 3-year extension.
Right. And he isn't going to be the coach of the Bulls the next time the Bulls are good. So
that's sad for you Bulls season ticket holders who are listening on radio.com.
Let's go to the Dial Pad guest line, and it's a pleasure to be joined by the great Gary St. Jean. Saint, you were on 95.7 The Game with JD and Coz. Now I'm gonna take you back a little bit, Saint. I'm gonna put you at the podium, okay? You're coaching the Warriors last night, and you're at the podium after the game, and you know John Dickinson gets a wild hair and he says, "Coach, you guys were having trouble getting the ball up the court. How come you didn't take a timeout with 20 seconds to go when you had two in your back pocket? How are you? Are you storming out, or what kind of answer are you giving me, Coach?"
No, I think in today's world, guys, this is, I don't know, I just think there's more scrutiny. The old days, the media, the reporters traveled with us when we were commercial. And, you know, they knew, they'd ask you maybe ahead of time what your strategy was. Sure, when you've got timeouts in the last 2 minutes and you don't use them, you're going to get asked that question. But, you know, at that point, sometimes you're better off when you're in the lead to inbound it quickly and not use the timeout where the defense really gets set. Inbound it quickly, get through the double team, go up the court and make the other team fall. And I think that was what the purpose was for the Warriors at that point.
Now, I know you used to tell Marty McNeil to kick rocks. Come on.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. That's true.
Well, yeah, you know, yeah, you do that, but that happens. You know, hey, you're still Jack McMahon, who was with us years ago with the Warriors with Nelly, said those 10 minutes after the game are the 10 minutes where you write the chapter in the book in your mind. There's 82 chapters. And then you're more relaxed or composed to go out and talk to the media versus right after you talk to the team. Sometimes the cold beverage is involved too, Coach.
Yeah, that's true. You know what? That's a different time. There was a different time when you did have a cold beverage and you guys could have a discussion about something and it wasn't going to show up on a blog post somewhere. It was going to be an honest discussion where both sides get to get each other's opinion out there and we're just talking. All right, Saint, how about this for Steve Kerr and his staff? How could this be, in a weird way, kind of a rejuvenating year? The last 5 years have been playing deep into June, high-stakes poker. You're playing to win NBA championships. Now, They're doing something completely different, trying to teach guys the NBA way, mold guys who they think can be part of their next wave of greatness. How can that energize a coaching staff that has really coached at the highest level under higher stress levels?
Well, you know, at heart, coaches are teachers. And that court is their classroom, and the players are pupils. And now you don't have guys that are already have their doctorate in basketball. Now you're doing teaching with underclass guys that don't have a degree yet. And you can help them. And there's a lot of positive feeling that goes on from a coaching staff when you see an individual player string together a positive number of games or the team starts to play well. And the bottom line is they're playing hard. They're not playing maybe as well as we'd like them to play, but that's because of the talent level. We've got some guys on this team right now that, you know, have battled to stay in the league, have been two-way players. We've got some rookies. And no better example of that than last night's game where you're up 8 with a couple minutes. You guys know the road is really tough. And, you know, you make a turnover, it's a 4-point play. Then you get another mistake, boom. And right now the other team's got a belief they can win and their fans are really into it. You know, I just think you ought to take that positive mental attitude and, for example, look at Burks last night. Another good game. You know, Russell has a big, big game. That was quite a performance. And, you know, beside last night, Pascal's been playing really well. And Bowman probably not going to play as much now, but he's been playing well. And we pick out these individuals, and our margin of error, guys, was so wide when we had the great team of 5 years. They could waltz through the first half, talk at halftime, press the button, and they'd come out and play a great third quarter. These guys have to really bring it, and, you know, we've had a couple games now where they've lost it in the last couple minutes, and to me, that's all about experience.
Gary St. Jean, our guest here on 95.7 The Game. John Dickinson, Jim Cozumel, it's Warriors this week. I got to ask you about D'Angelo Russell's performance. The big question coming into the game was, how would it fit, given that you had this younger group that found a way to compete these last three games without him? How would it work with him? I think aside from the final couple of minutes there where they let the game get away, you have to look at that as saying, all right, it worked out pretty well with him being the lead dog and everybody kind of following suit.
Oh, John, hey, he was superb. And, you know, in the pick and roll game, he put on a clinic. He got the switch. He had Towns on him. He'd pull up on him and launch with a quick release. He's a kind of unique player because we always talk about speed and quickness. He doesn't do anything fast, but he has a knack, a feel to find space. And, you know, obviously he got hot from the three. He made a lot of difficult shots. He's not a blow-by kind of player. He's not a point guard that's going to blow it up in transition. He's got a gait that's slower, but yet he gets to where he needs to. I think he's very unique.
Saint, I'm going to start. I want to pick out a couple of guys in particular to look at. You mentioned how Burks had another nice ball game with 18. Can you explain Willie Cauley-Stein to me right now? And it's you know, it's a small sample size so far at the start of the year, but you see him and you think 7-foot jumping jack. He's going to get around the rim, get a bunch of dunks offensively, and block a bunch of shots. What do you see when you see Willie Cauley-Stein?
Well, I see a guy, and I don't like the word potential. I want a guy to grow and get to where he. His expectations are. We've been talking about him for years up in Sacramento. Well, you know, would he be doing better if he didn't turn his ankle and he was playing with Steph and Clay and, you know, all of those guys? Sure he would be. But, you know, he and Burks both high ankle sprains, so he hasn't had much of a training camp. And frankly, he's not in sync to me. I don't see any aspect of his game that looks like, wow, he's really got my eye. I've always thought he's a good pick-and-roll player because he rolls hard to the hoop. He's got good hands, and he can finish. You know, and on the other, he did make a big block last night. They're not going to ask him to do a ton of stuff. You know, Coach, you know him. You know, you want him to contest shots. I don't know that he's a great shot blocker. You want him to rim run. You want him to be quick in the pick-and-roll. If he does all of that, that's good. you know, stay within who you are. Don't try to be somebody else.
Do you think the Warriors believe they could play him? I know he played 25 minutes last night, but then you're talking about overtime minutes as well there. Do you think the Warriors thought they were getting a little bit more with him, though, than they've seen to this point?
Well, sure, because of the injury. I'm going to let the jury be out here for another month with him.
Okay.
Let's see how he does then. Because, guys, I'll tell you what. When you can't even touch the ball, I mean, you're out of shape. You can't do much on the floor. You know, I like to think he's going to play better than he's been playing.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. And it's so funny, the way you described him, Monty Poole, who's the Warriors insider over at NBC Sports Bay Area, he and I were having the discussion, and that's the exact way I described Willie Cauley-Stein. You see what he has, and you want him to run the floor. Rim run, he'd get some easy ones with all the talent around him, but you're waiting for all of it to happen, and you just wonder if it ever will. Great point, though. If he had those other guys around him, maybe his skill set gets shown a little bit better and a little bit more great. Fashion for him, and he's able to do what he eventually can do. It's an interesting run for this Warriors team right now. One thing I will say also, Saint, and I was watching some of your guys' shows when they were back over at Chase Center, I give credit to the fans. A lot of fans would turn their back on a team. They were ripping and roaring a game where they were trying to come back against Charlotte. I give the fans of the Warriors credit because they're not turning on the team.
Well, it kind of reminds me when Michael Jordan retired from the Bulls, and they used to be in the Chicago Stadium, and they went to the United Center. And there was a love fest with the team. And that's what we have here after these 5 years. These fans are terrific, you know, over at Oracle. Now they come over here, and it's an experience to go to a game there. You know, before our shows, I get to talk to families and kids and say, is this your first time? And I tell the kids, make sure you thank your mom and dad for taking you, because you're going to see the best arena in the world right now. And you're talking about the fans. You know, when people went to the games the last 5 years, you were favored every single game you played at home. And now you're playing at home and you're seeing these guys, you know, struggling and clawing to stay in the NBA. They're getting viewed, guys, by the rest of the league right now. They're looking at guys and saying, well, maybe the Warriors will be willing to give up one of these guys if they want to keep Bowman and Lee on a two-way, on get rid of the two-way and sign them to a regular contract. So they're on the stage. They're being evaluated. And I think the fans, Coach, you're right on. I think the fans have just really loved their hustle, their energy. It's really great to watch. And then that first win at the building, John, you were there. Gosh, that felt great. I mean, that felt like a playoff game. People stuck around after the game for our post-game show. I looked at Pop, and I said, Pop, I can't hear you. And it was that loud, and it felt like it was in the finals.
Yeah, it was a great energy, and it kind of let you know, hey, you know what? Even though this season probably isn't going to be what everybody wanted it to be, that Warriors fans are going to be okay with it, right, Sam? I mean, this is a hardy group of fans that I think, you know, the last 5 years, you know, maybe outsiders have kind of looked at it, and maybe even some of the more diehard Warrior fans have said, you know, Warriors fans have gotten a little soft. I don't think that's true, Saint.
No. And you guys, you talk about these things, and the fans are listening. And you, it's not like, oh, my gosh, what's going to happen? Hey, we got three all pros that are going to be coming back, you know, Draymond, obviously, and the two Hall of Fame guys. And then you still got Looney. So there's your nucleus. You got Russell. And then, you know, look at Pascal. And then who else out of these guys can be a guy coming off the bench? And, oh, by the way, if you are in the lottery and you get up high, say you get some good fortune and get up there, you get a lottery pick, you're hoping it's a year where there's quality players up there. And then they also have this trade exception from the Iguodala deal, which is about $17 million. You can aggregate or add to that a player, get to a big number, maybe they could get somebody special to come over. So, you know, that's the perfect picture, all those things, you know, happening, but you know, it makes you, you know, feel like, okay, you know, we'll deal with this year. We're going to hang with these guys, stay positive, and, you know, we can get back on track come next year.
Saint, I want to have you put the GM hat on as it relates to, you know, some of the guys like Burks and maybe some of the role players that other teams may have interest in. Or if you're a GM, are you making calls right now, or are you sitting back knowing the situation that you're in and you're just letting teams call you and maybe waiting for a, you know, something that you go, okay, I'd like to do that. What's that dynamic like from the GM's point of view, given the current state?
Well, you know, John, whether you're the GM or your assistant, whatever, you are checking in with other teams. I would say bi-weekly, and hey, take the onus to make the call. You know, how's your team playing, John? Who's playing really well for you? Is there anything that you think we can do? Are there positions where you want to get a little stronger? Do we have somebody there that might be able to help you? This is what we're looking to do. These guys might be available. This is the range of the money. What can we take back? And so that's an ongoing discussion for front office people, and you log it in. In our day, we hand wrote it on in a booklet, but in today's world, they probably got it on their iPads. You note every conversation. What day you talk to, say, Oklahoma City, and did you talk to Presti, or did you talk to an assistant? Did you get a little scuttlebutt out there when your scout was out on the road? Or when you played there, did you get a feel about they may want to do something? So, you know, you want to stay on top of that stuff and always be proactive.
Sane, I'd like to ask you this as far as the GM roles for a franchise go. You are so close to your team and see them every day and begin to get opinions about your guys. And maybe even sometimes there's bias because you're there so close to it,
yeah,
because you're so emotional. Did you have somebody or a couple of people outside the organization who you would say, hey, listen, I need you to scout my team for a week and get back and report on my team and tell me, because I want to see if it matches what I think my team is?
Exactly. Because you're right on. You might have a GM that's retired that you really has been a mentor to you or somebody you really respect. Right on. You say, take a look at my team. You know, what are you seeing out there? What are we doing well? What do we need to improve upon? How about individuals? And then sometimes what happens, guys, as a coach, sometimes gets let go during the course of the year. A lot of guys will call. It may be the coach himself beside the GM and say, hey, give me an evaluation of our team. Watch the next three games. Tell me what you think. So that's always a good way to get the pulse on your team, because you do become a little biased and maybe a little short-sighted with your guys. So that's right on.
Saint, what'd you make of the Rick Bucher report that you know, Curry unlikely to come back and the injury, you know, injury was far more severe? When you get a report like that, what are you thinking?
Well, I got to tell you guys something. Within the teams in the league, that's discussion that's taking place between a couple GMs or whoever on another team, saying, let's hypothetically say we get to February and the Warriors are playing their hearts out, but they're not getting many wins. You know, when are they going to bring them back? And then if you get to March and you've only got 6 weeks left, then you get in a philosophical debate. Do you want to try to bring Steph back? Or if Clay was doing great in his rehab, do you want to bring him back? So when those discussions are happening within the league, maybe then somebody within the league talks to a writer like Rick Bucher and kind of throws a little bit of salt out there, food for thought, and he runs with it. Now, you guys know, I mean, a source said, well, that's where everybody gets sideways, because if you're on a team, well, who is the source? Like Steve said in his post game last night, hey, I'm a pretty good source, and I'm going to tell you, we haven't talked more than the fact we're going to evaluate him in X amount of time, and you know, this is what we're seeing for the future. So, you know, I could see that happening real, real easy.
See, give me one time when you were either coaching or a general manager in a front office where you had, you know, you strongly, what was the strongest thing you ever had to dispute as far as a report that came out where you were just ticked off?
Oh, boy. You know, it probably had to be something involving Sprewell.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Because that was a crazy time. You know, they were calling to be on 60 Minutes. I had told my mother, I said, Mom, you're not going to see me on TV anymore. I'm going to be in the background. Then she gets the New York Times and sees me walking with six lawyers to the deposition. And all kinds of rumors were flying around. And, of course, there were the league lawyers and there were the team lawyers. And then the Players Association had rumors. And so they were talking, for example, you talked about having him come back. Well, and then another side said, no, you know, we're not going to have him come back. So that debate really got out there. And the example would be if you did that in the public sector in business, you would be fired or let go or terminated. And so then you talk about, well, if the Warriors suspend them for the year, are they just doing that to recoup some revenue? So you had all these different things going on. And frankly, guys, that's a period in my tenure that I don't talk about much because I'm happy to be getting old and I'm forgetful and I don't think about that much.
Wow. Yeah, that's an all-timer, Saint, in just the history of sports right there.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
Thanks a lot. We really appreciate it, as always. And, hey, I'll talk to you on Tuesday.
Hey, you know what, John? I'm enjoying these because we're doing a podcast and we're just letting it rip. We go for quite a long time and kind of review the Warriors for the week, and then we kind of look around the league, and it's been fun. You guys are going to laugh at me. I'm about to get on the San Mateo Bridge. I pulled over here for you guys.
Thank you.
I'm headed over to Foster City. We're having the baptism for my grandson, William, today.
Oh, congrats.
Noon. I already picked up the cake, and I'm fired up.
Attaboy.
Good
Way
stuff,
to go.
Saint.
Way to go. That's a good family time you're going to have today. God bless you and a family. Way to go. Have a great time today.
Thanks, guys. All the best.
Hey, I'll see you. I'll see you at Mass sometime soon. I haven't seen you in a while, Saint.
Way to go, Coach. We got the bishop coming, so I'm going to get dispensation for a month.
Attaboy.
And y'all can pray for me, all right?
We will. You're on the list, JD. Believe me. Saint and I know. Saint knows the high people. He's got the Monsignor in his back pocket, so I know that. Way to go, Saint.
Thanks, Saint.
Good stuff.
See you, buddy.
See you, guys. Thanks a million.
Thanks.
All right, Gary Saint-Jean.
He tells great stories about him and the Monsignor. They used to do a crab feed night, and they're mixing up the pasta at 9 in the morning, and they're pouring bottles of the grape. They're enjoying that pasta. It took them all day to make it, I'll tell you, boy, but they went through a few bottles. So, way to go, Saint.
Yeah, good stuff there. And, boy, yeah, the Sprewell Carlissimo stuff.
Wow.
It's hard to believe how long ago that's been.
Were there any winners in that? Yes, the lawyers. Oh, you have the league lawyers, the team lawyers, the player lawyers, Players Association lawyers. Who won that battle? The lawyers.
Yeah, and a dark time in Warriors history, and a time I think that's worth remembering at a time like this, where the Warriors are, you know, in the midst of what looks like it's going to be a down season, but it ain't going to be that down. Right?
No. That is a different layer of down, John, that we hope we never see in any sport ever again. That was a very different time, a horribly unfortunate time. And now it's, we can chuckle a little bit about it, but we don't ever want to see that again.
John Dickinson, Jim Cozumore, Warriors this week here on 95.7 The Game. 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. If you're the GM of the Warriors right now, Coz, are you making calls, or are
yes.
you sitting back and you're letting the calls come to you?
I'm calling and finding out because I'm a proactive. You know what? I use this story a lot to frame my Warriors view. Joe Lacob, Peter Guber buy the team. They overpay. People laugh at them. They bought the worst franchise in the NBA and paid more than anyone had ever paid for an NBA team. And they immediately said, I want to have a meeting with Dwight Howard, and I want to have a meeting with the biggest name free agents out there. And everyone's laughing at him, saying, you're the Golden State stinking Warriors. Who do you think you are having a meeting with Dwight Howard? And they might not have gotten Dwight Howard, but maybe they were in the top three of teams as he was choosing where to go. But they were setting an example for every other free agent in the future. If you're good, we want you. If we deem you a valuable asset, we want you. And I think that they have that permeates the organization. And so Bob Myers isn't sitting back going, yeah, we know this is kind of a down wasted year. So I'm going to, this is my load management year. No. I think Bob Myers is working harder now than maybe he did in the 5-year run because he's constantly evaluating. He's constantly figuring out. He's constantly trying to cajole another general manager and see where they're at. Hey, you know what? Oklahoma City has a ton of assets out there because of all those first-round draft picks they're going to have in the future. Would they be involved in something? I think Bob Myers is probably working harder, and I think I'd be on the phone making phone calls, trying to be more proactive to let teams know, hey, we're still in the game.
Well, and really what it boils down to now is something that I first brought up on July 1st, and that's the fact that this season could essentially become an extension of two off-seasons, meaning the off-season that's already passed and the off-season that is to come at the end of this season before the Warriors lace them up again into September, early October of 2020. Essentially a 16-month off-season where the Warriors could go from being a championship-level contender to where they are now to right back to a championship-level contender, but at least a top 10 type of a team in the NBA. Maybe it winds up being just short of a championship-level contender, but I think it's not crazy to have that be the goal.
I'm going to rock your world when we continue with a scenario, and I'm going to ask you if the Warriors are the next team to have it happen or if they will stay away from this scenario as one of the great franchises in the NBA's history.
All right, John Dickinson, Jim Cosmore. We'll do that next. Warriors This Week. We're halfway through here on a Saturday on 95.7 The Game.
Warriors This Week continues on 95.7 The Game.
95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. We're halfway through here on a Saturday morning. It's John Dickinson and Jim Cosmore. Warriors This Week, 95.7 The Game. Mark Medina, 11:30. And hey, you had a chance to speak with the head coach of the Warriors, Steve Kerr, a couple of nights ago. We're going to run that back at about 12:30 before we get on out. And then I'm going to have Warriors Live coming up at 3:30. Here on 95.7 The Game as well.
So you get like an hour and a half, 2 hours?
Yeah, I'm going to get in my sleep pod, and then I'm going to maybe get a slice of pizza, that is, nothing else. And then Matt Kolsky.
Too bad.
And then Matt, well, we are, I mean, yeah, you know, you take a walk down Broadway.
I've heard.
And then Matt Kolsky will join me coming up at 3:30 with Warriors Live.
That's a busy day you guys got going
you
on.
You had a hypothetical.
Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Talking to Saint. I got to be honest, I'm praising the fan base because they have been into it knowing that this isn't going to be the same type of a year that they have had for the last 7 years. It's a new building. There was a belief that it would be a different fan base because they moved from Oakland to San Francisco. I think the fans have been pretty good. They're still pretty rabid. They still tell us stuff. But when I listen to the games I'm driving around, the crowd seems there. And by that, I mean they're into it. Same thing when I'm watching it on television. I get a sense that there's a starting to be kind of a feeling. And as Saint said, it was a lot like a playoff game or a finals game because everyone was so active and into it. And he then started to say how it was like the Chicago Bulls. When the Bulls won three, Michael went away, then the Bulls won three more. And the fans came back. Different circumstance. I won't get into the minutiae of that. But I do want to compare the Warriors to that stretch of Chicago Bulls teams.
Oh, okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
So you tell me what the Warriors are about to face. The Bulls won three championships with the greatest player of his generation, Michael Jordan. He left for 2 years. He comes back, and they win three more championships. He retires. Everyone leaves. They believed that because they were the Chicago Bulls, because they had the greatest at one time, free agents would flock to Chicago to maintain the greatness of the Bulls uniform that they thought was the same level of a Celtic uniform, the same level of a Laker uniform. From that time until now, the Bulls have gotten to zero Eastern Conference finals and no NBA finals, obviously. The best they had was a second round run with Derrick Rose. That's what they've done so far since then. And they believed because they were so great, they were the faces of the NBA. For 8 years, they were the it team, because the 2 years they didn't win, they still made it deep into the playoffs. Right? One of those years, I think it was an Eastern Conference final. One of those was a second-round knockout that they still blame Hugh Hollins, the official, on.
Yeah, I think they were both second-round knockouts.
They were both second-round knockouts?
Yeah, but the Knicks ended up going to the finals, and the Magic ended up going to the finals when Jordan came back the second year.
And the bottom line to that is the Bulls thought they were going to be, hey, free agents, we're going to remember Tim Duncan and who's the guy from the Pistons?
Grant Hill.
Grant Hill. They were just going to sign with the Chicago Bulls, and they were going to be the first team to open up slots. They were going to get all those great draft picks because they were going to load manage for a year, then come back with all this money to spend on free agents. And they got Ron Mercer, and they got another guy named Robinson who took $32 million and barely ever gave an effort on the floor. They were not very good. My question to you as a Warrior fan is, you were the best thing going for 5 years. You were the it team. You were the face of the NBA. You're not anymore. Why are the Warriors not going to fall into what the Bulls fell into?
I think they're in the middle ground portion of that right now, not the 1999 Jordan's gone for good, going to end up playing for the Wizards portion.
Okay.
That's my take on it. I think this is right now, this particular season, this is the version of the Michael Jordan's playing baseball in the minor leagues for the White Sox. That's this year. Now, look, the Bulls were still a good enough team to make it to the second round of the playoffs. The Warriors are not. But when Jordan came back and then had a full season, they were right back to winning 72 games and competing for championships with that core group. Jordan, and it was really Jordan, Pippen, and all new guys. I think the Warriors believe that it's Curry and Klay and Draymond. Those three are coming back after their hypothetical hiatus for playing baseball, which is this year where they're all injured.
Sure.
And they're going to be with a new group able to compete for championships again next season.
So that group, Steph, Klay, Draymond, is their Pippen and Kukoc combination platter that they had in that middle ground.
Right. And it's just as if Pippen and Kukoc had to miss the whole year because of injuries.
And I'm maybe more equating it to the second three-run.
Right. You're saying they're more out, like, this is Jordan's not coming back.
Yeah. But more importantly, the Bulls were wrong in that we're the Bulls. Of course, people are going to come want to play for us. That's my question. Even when Steph and Klay come back, who wants to come play for the Warriors? Is there a case to be made for?
Well, that's
where you're coming.
But that, yeah. And see, that's where I agree and I disagree with you.
That's
that
an interesting
sense.
Take.
I disagree with the premise that this is where they are in terms of, well, they're done, because they still have those guys coming back, right? But I agree with you in the sense of when those guys do come back, it's not a guarantee that they're going to be able to attract top-level guys, and they don't have the money to pay them anyway.
Right. But they are creative enough to get things done. That's why I maintained when I said,
like, Giannis to me is a pipe dream. Like, the one you always hear is Giannis.
Yep.
Oh, Giannis. They're just going to get, Giannis is just going to want to come here. Well, look, Giannis isn't going to want to come to a 20-62 team.
Okay.
And the only way you're going to get Giannis is if Giannis says, I demand to be a Warrior. Because